Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29, entitled Talks Between Narad and King Prachini Barhi, Text 18 to 20. Deho Twindriyashva Samvatsararayo Gatihi Dvikarma Chakras Triguna Dhvaja Panchasubandhuraha Manorashmir Buddhi Suto Rinnido Dvandva Kubaraha Panchendriyartha Prakshepaha Saptadhatu Varuthakaha Akutir Vikramo Bahyo Mrigatrishnam Pradhavati Ekadashendriya Chamuho Panchasuna Vinodakrit. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Narad Muni continued, what I referred to as the chariot was in actuality the body. The senses are the horses that pull that chariot. As time passes, year after year, these horses run without obstruction, but in fact they make no progress. Pious and impious activities are the two wheels of the chariot. The three modes of material nature are the chariot's flags. The five types of life air constitute the living entity's bondage, and the mind is considered to be the rope. Intelligence is the chariot driver, the heart is the sitting place in the chariot, and the dualities of life, such as pleasure and pain, are the knotting place. The seven elements are the coverings of the chariot, and the working senses are the five external processes. The 11 senses are the soldiers, being engrossed in sense enjoyment. The living entity seated on the chariot hankers after fulfillment of his false desires and runs after sense enjoyment life after life. Purport. The entanglement of the living entity in sense enjoyment is very nicely explained in these verses. The word samvatsara, meaning the progress of time, is significant. Day after day, week after week, fortnight after fortnight, month after month, year after year, the living entity becomes entangled in the chariot's progress. The chariot rests on two wheels, which are pious and impious activities. The living entity attains a certain position in life in a particular type of body according to his pious and impious activities. But his transmigration into different bodies should not be taken as progress. Real progress is explained in Bhagavad Gita. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvatah tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti so arjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. One makes real progress when he does not have to take another material body, as stated in Chaitanya Charitamrit. Eite brahmand bhari ananta jiva gana chaurasi laksha yonite karaye brahmana. The living entity is wandering throughout the entire universe and is taking birth in different species on different planets. Thus he moves up and down, but that is not real progress. Real progress is getting out of this material world altogether, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Abrahma bhuvana loka punaravartino arjuna mame mamupetya tu kaunteya punarjanma na vidyate. From the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again. Even if one is promoted to Brahmaloka, the highest planet in the universe, he has to come down again to the lower planetary systems. Thus he is wandering up and down perpetually under the influence of the three modes of material nature. Being illusioned, He thinks he is making progress. He is like an airplane encircling the earth day and night, incapable of leaving the earth's gravitational field. Factually, there is no progress because the airplane is conditioned by earth's gravity. Just as a king is seated on a chariot, the living entity is seated in the body. The sitting place is the heart, and the living entity sits there and engages in the struggle for existence, which goes on without progress perpetually. In the words of Narottam Das Thakur, Karma kand jnana kand keval visher bhand amrita baliya yeva khaye nana yoni sada phire kadarya bhakshana kare tara janme adha pate aaye. The living entity struggles very hard due to the influence of fruitive activity and mental speculation, and simply gets a different type of body life after life. He eats all kinds of nonsense and is condemned by his activities of sense enjoyment. If one really wants to progress in life, he must give up the ways of karmakanda and jnanakanda, fruitive activities and mental speculation. Being fixed in Krishna consciousness, one can become free from the entanglement of birth and death and the vain struggle for existence. In these verses, the words mrigatrishnam pradhavati are very significant because the living entity is influenced by a thirst for sense enjoyment. He is like a deer that goes to the desert to search out water. In a desert, an animal simply searches in vain for water. Of course, there is no water in the desert, and the animal simply sacrifices his life in an attempt to find it. Everyone is planning for future happiness, thinking that somehow or other he can reach a certain point, he will be happy. In actuality, however, when he comes to that point, he sees that there is no happiness. He then plans to go further and further to another point. That is called mrigatrishna, and its basis is sense enjoyment in this material world. Into Narad Muni's unique and revolutionary style of preaching, wherein he is using allegories and graphical comparisons, as he is doing in these verses, comparing the various limbs and activities of one's body to the various components of a chariot. Elsewhere also we read how Narad Muni, in order to convince Mrigarari, he used some special effects, showed him a trailer of the hellish punishments which he might face if he continued his sinful activities. Also, Narad Muni, when he was captured by Valmiki, then known as Ratnakar, Narad Muni used the family members to preach to Valmiki Muni. Narad Muni preaching to Prahlad Maharaj, the message was transmitted within the womb. Now, with all of our advanced FM technology, can we transmit a message or a lecture within someone's womb to the embryo? Also, Narad Muni preached to Chitraketu through the dead sun. And also in the sixth canto, we read Narad Muni in a very special way is preaching to the Haryashvas through some puzzles, through some riddles. He is just asking these Haryashvas, or putting forth some riddles in front of these Haryashvas. There is a kingdom where only one male lives. There is a hole from having which entered no one emerges out. There is a river which flows in both directions. There is a sharp blade which revolves automatically. So, all these unique and far out ways in which we see Narad Muni is preaching to various personalities in different situations, using allegories, graphical comparisons, special effects, puzzles, riddles. Sometimes when we conduct some seminars, we use some PowerPoint presentations and some interactive group activities, and we think that we are very innovative and revolutionary in our style of preaching. But if we look into the style of preaching which Narad Muni adopts, we have to learn a lot in terms of not just the purity aspect of Narad Muni, of course that is the main component of his preaching, but also the kind of strategies which Narad Muni is using to deliver the message across. In these few verses, Narad Muni is emphasizing on the power of mind and intelligence in its potentiality to bind conditioned living entity and also to free that conditioned living entity. We have that famous verse, Mana eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshaya bandhaya vishaya sango muktyai nirvishayam manaha. Mind is the cause of bondage and mind is the cause of liberation. We know the meaning of this word yoga, which means to relink our consciousness with the supreme consciousness. Also, religion has a similar meaning. It comes from the Greek word religio. Re means again, like we have reincarnation, to incarnate again. And ligio, it means to connect. Also the word ligament comes from that. Ligament we have in our body which connects various limbs of our body. So mind or consciousness is the laboratory where this individual consciousness can be connected with the supreme consciousness. And Narad Muni is preaching to King Prachini Barhi in order to extract that potentiality of one's own mind and using that power of the mind to free oneself from the mire of this material world. So Narad Muni is teaching King Prachini Barhi and also all of us how to become our own freedom fighters. We have to fight for our own freedom. In the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, what we are discussing in these few verses has been discussed quite elaborately, focusing on the point of the contamination of the mind and its connection with bondage and also liberation. When the four Kumaras approached Lord Brahma and they are asking a very puzzling question, which was very much difficult for Lord Brahma to answer, for which he had to call upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appeared in the form of Hamsa avatar and helped Lord Brahma to answer this one question put forth by the four Kumaras. So the four Kumaras are asking Lord Brahma, Guneshva vishate cheto gunas chetasi cha prabho katham anyonya santyago mumukshor atiti tirasho. They are asking, Gunesh avishato chetoho, that the mind has a natural proclivity to enter into the sense objects. Gunas chetasi cha prabho, and also the sense objects through desires, they enter into one's mind. Katham anyon santyago. So how can someone give up this mutual relationship of the mind with the sense objects? And they are using the word anyonya. Anyonya refers to, it's a contraction, just like we have in any language, two words can be contracted into one. We have can and not becomes can't. So anya, anya becomes anyonya, and it refers to other and other. anya, anya, which means the mind and the sense objects. So they are mutually linked with each other, the mind and the sense objects. And each of them define each other. So they are asking Lord Brahma, when naturally the mind is absorbed in sense objects and the sense objects then enter into the mind through desires, mumukshor atiti tirsho, how can someone achieve liberation? How can someone destroy this mutual relationship of the mind with the sense objects? How can that take place? Now, Lord Brahma, when he heard this question, he was really puzzled. He was confused and practically speechless, couldn't give any answer to him. So he meditated upon the Supreme Lord, and the Lord appeared in the form of Hamsa Avatar. And it is explained in the various purports in those few verses that how the mind works with the sense objects and how it has a certain perception in connection with the sense objects. Nobody in this world perceives things or situations according to an objective view. In fact, everyone perceives things in a very subjective way according to the perception of one's mind. Just like our eyes may see many things in its field of vision. Sometimes if we are walking outside, we may see so many things, some vehicles passing by, some birds flying, somebody walking. But according to the perception of our mind, which is absorbed in certain sense object, it focuses only on certain objects. Which means the mind is very subjective in its perception. For example, if a family comes to have darshan of the deities, so the father is there, mother is there, the child is there. Immediately the child will perceive or focus only on some animals, say only on the monkeys over here. And the father, if he is a painter, he might focus only on maybe the backdrop. Or if he is an artist, he might focus upon how the dressing has been done or whatever, or the beauty aspect. So we see that how everyone perceives objects and situations not objectively but subjectively according to the sense object which is there in their mind. Now therefore, the four Kumaras are saying that the mind is defined by the sense object and the sense objects define the mind. We may see a certain object, say for example a painting, and a person, according to his particular mode, he may focus his eyes on a certain object on the painting. For example, if a painting has some nice scenery, a painting has some people, a person in the mode of goodness will focus upon the nice scenery immediately. And a person in the mode of passion might focus upon a respective sense object. A person in the mode of ignorance will maybe search for some intoxication within that painting. In fact, according to the law of art, a painter, an expert painter, Haridas Thakur Prabhu can correct me, an expert painter, by his painting, he guides the eyes of the seer. According to what prominence he gives in his painting, he guides the eyes, what he should see first, the colors which he uses and the prominence he gives to certain things in his painting. Automatically, a person, when first time he looks at that painting, his eyes are guided by the painter, what he should see first, second, third, like that. So this means that the object then defines the mind of a person. And the mind, which is filled with sense objects, defines the sense object. It might be a little confusing. That is what is mentioned in this 11th canto. Try to understand what the four Kumaras are trying to extract out from Lord Brahma. So, they say that when we interact in this material world with certain sense objects, our mind, it censors out everything else except for the attachment which the mind develops with a certain sense object. And just if we take our daily activities, how our mind focuses at different times on different sense objects. In the afternoon when we are hungry, the mind censors out everything else except for food. And anything which the mind then sees, it tries to connect with that sense object. Even if the eyes might be seeing a telephone, but because there is hunger, there is that urge within, so the mind immediately works upon how I can use this phone to satisfy my hunger. And when that hunger is satisfied, and when the body, maybe it's tired during the course of the day, then immediately the mind registers that now I have to search for some place to take rest. So which means the food is censored out, everything else is censored out, the mind focuses only for this activity of taking rest. So how these sense objects, when they are mutually connected with the mind, how it makes the mind work in a certain way, think in a certain way. And then it is explained that the same mind, when it is mutually connected with the intelligence, when the intelligence takes over, as herein it is mentioned, that the chariot driver is the intelligence and the reins are the mind. So when the mind, in its mutual interaction with the intelligence, works with the intelligence, can advance. Like, the nature of the mind is sankalpa and vikalpa. It likes and dislikes. When in connection with the sense object, it accepts thing, it rejects thing on a sensory platform. But when it has a connection with the intelligence, then the acceptance and rejection is done on an intellectual platform. For example, a person, if he is thirsty, and that urge to drink something becomes so strong that he is frantically searching for something to drink. He opens some refrigerator, sees that there is a bottle and there is some transparent liquid in that. Immediately the mind says, pick it up and drink it. So he picks that bottle. As soon as he is about to open it, he looks and it is written poison on it. So now the intelligence takes over and the intelligence says, leave it. And immediately the mind, which had registered that is a likable object, immediately because of the help or mutual interaction with the intelligence, now starts disliking the same object. So herein is an example of how mind works in collaboration with the intelligence, dislikes a certain object which might be harmful. So this is how the mind registers with the help of intelligence what things he should like for his advancement and what things he should dislike again for his advancement. Now the difference between a materialistic mind and the mind of a spiritualist is that the materialistic mind also sometimes rejects a certain sense object using intelligence. But a materialistic mind never disagrees on the principle of sense enjoyment. For example, a man may divorce his wife. So for a certain time he may reject that sense object, but on principle he has not disagreed on sense enjoyment. He might marry again. But on the other hand, a spiritual mind might interact with a sense object, but disagrees on the principle of sense enjoyment. like devotees in Grihastha Ashram, might be living with sense objects, but they disagree on the principle of sense enjoyment, whereas a materialistic person, he never disagrees on sense enjoyment, but keeps on rejecting and accepting sense objects. So this is the difference. How mind in connection with intelligence works, and mind in connection with the sense objects works and degrades the living entity. Now, when Lord Brahma, when he encountered this question, he was very much puzzled, as we said. So he called upon the Supreme Lord, and the Supreme Lord, he incarnated as the Hamsa Avatar. And Hamsa Avatar is giving just three answers, which means three remedies which will completely purify a person from this mutual interaction. So the Lord is saying to Lord Brahma and to the four Kumaras that as far as the mind's interaction with the sense objects is concerned, first of all, one has to understand that all these sense objects, they comprise of my external energy. So if you simply understand that it is my external energy and it has to be used in my service, even though the mind might be interacting with the sense objects, it will be used in the service of the Supreme Lord. Which means the mind will not have any problem with the sense objects if he just understands that it is the energy of the Supreme Lord. So this was the first answer given by the Lord. The second answer the Lord gave, one has to understand that the mind, the senses, the sense objects, they are different from the pure spirit soul. The pure spirit soul is completely aloof and above the material mind, the senses and the sense objects. If one just realizes this, then he'll be always aloof from the interactions of the mind with the sense objects. Jeev Krishna Das, E Vishwas Korle To Ar Dukhanai. If we just understand that we are servants of Krishna as spirit soul, all the problems will be solved. And the third answer, remedy which the Lord is giving, he says that with that understanding that the energy has to be utilized in my service, and one has to understand that he is spirit soul, one has to fix his mind upon me. So fixing one's mind on the Supreme Lord is the ultimate remedy for the problem which was put forth by the four Kumaras to Lord Brahma. And we know that famous verse, Krishna bhuliya jiva bhogavancha kare, nikatastha maya tare jhapatiya dhare. So unless there is Krishna bhuliya, there cannot be bhogavancha. Bhogavancha occurs only when there is Krishna bhuliya, when we forget Krishna. So therefore, here in Hamsa Avatar is giving this remedy that when we fix our mind on the Supreme Lord, which means the mind which has got so many impressions, it's like so many craters it has got on it because of interaction with the sense objects for so many lifetimes. For example, if you walk on soft mud, the foot creates an impression, and immediately when it rains, those impressions are filled with water. So similarly, we have so many impressions on our mind because of interaction with the sense objects, and whenever the opportunity comes, those impressions get filled with desires to enjoy those sense objects. So what we have to do, those impressions have to be filled with thoughts of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada gave an example that our contaminated material mind is like a glass of black ink. And the process of hearing and chanting the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is like pure, pristine white milk. So in order to take out this black ink, the contamination of our mind, what we have to do is pour sufficient amounts of this pure milk within the glass. So what will happen? All that black ink will be thrown out, will be flushed out. And initially, it might be seen that the milk is mixed with that black ink and is creating a messy situation, creating some kind of nuisance. So initially, when we start the process of hearing and chanting, we find that all those contaminations, they surface out. So we have to keep pouring this white milk, and at one point of time, all that black ink will be flushed out, and the white milk will be the only thing remaining. Which means that our mind, which has been blackened like that black ink, has to be flushed out with the process of hearing and chanting, which Srila Prabhupada compares with this pure white milk. And that's what herein Narad Muni is trying to explain to King Prachini Bharhi, that mind is the only cause of one's bondage and mind is the only cause for one's liberation. So we'll stop over here. If anyone has any questions or comments. Granthra Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.